You would have. She took her finger and pressed it to his lips, then ran it down his throat, across his chest, coming to a stop where his heart had once beat. I trust you. Maybe you shouldn't. I'm a shadow hunter. I can fight you off if I have to. Jace didn't fight me off. Jace is in love with the idea of dying, said Isabel. I'm not. She slung her legs around his hips. She was amazingly flexible, and slid forward until she could brush her lips against his. He wanted to kiss her, wanted it so badly his whole body ached. He opened his mouth tentatively, touched his tongue to hers, and felt a sharp pain. His tongue had slid along the razor edge of his fang. He tasted his own blood and drew back abruptly, turning his face away from her. Isabel, I can't. He closed his eyes. She was warm and soft in his lap, teasing, torturous. His fangs ached painfully. His whole body felt like sharp wires were twisting through his veins. I don't want you to see me like this. Simon. Gently, she touched his cheek, turning his face toward her. This is who you are. His fangs had retracted, slowly, but they still ached. He hid his face in his hands and spoke between his fingers. You can't possibly want this. You can't possibly want me. My own mother threw me out of the house. I bit Maureen. She was only a kid. I mean, look at me. Look what I am, where I live, what I do. I'm nothing. Isabel stroked his hair lightly. He looked at her between his fingers. Up close, he could see that her eyes weren't black, but a very dark brown, flecked with gold. He was sure he could see pity in them. He didn't know what he expected her to say. Isabel used boys and threw them away. Isabel was beautiful and tough and perfect and didn't need anything. Least of all a vampire who wasn't even very good at being a vampire. He could feel her breathing. She smelled sweet. Blood, mortality, gardenias. You're not nothing, she said. Simon, please, let me see your face. Reluctantly, he lowered his hands. He could see her more clearly now. She looked soft and lovely in the moonlight, her skin pale and creamy, her hair like a black waterfall. She unlooped her hands from around his neck. Look at these, she said, touching the white scars of healed marks that snowflaked her silvery skin, on her throat, on her arms, on the curves of her breasts. Ugly, aren't they? Nothing about you is ugly, Izzy, said Simon. Honestly shocked. Girls aren't supposed to be covered in scars, Isabel said matter-of-factly. But they don't bother you. They're part of you. No, of course they don't bother me. She touched his lips with her fingers. Being a vampire is part of you. I didn't ask you to come here last night because I couldn't think of anyone else to ask. I want to be with you, Simon. It scares the hell out of me. But I do. Her eyes shimmered, and before he could wonder for more than a moment whether it was with tears, he had leaned forward and kissed her. This time it wasn't awkward. This time she leaned into it, and he was suddenly under her, rolling her on top of him. Her long black hair fell down around them both like a curtain. She whispered to him softly as he ran his hands up her back. He could feel her scars under his fingertips, and he wanted to tell her he thought of them as ornaments, testaments to her bravery that only made her more beautiful. But that would have meant stopping kissing her, and he didn't want to do that. She was moaning and moving in his arms. Her fingers were in his hair as the two of them rolled sideways, and now she was under him, and his arms were full of the softness and warmth of her, in his mouth with the taste of her, and the scent of her skin, salt and perfume and blood. He stiffened again, all over, and Isabel felt it. She caught hold of his shoulders. She was luminous in the darkness. "Go ahead," she whispered. He could feel her heart slamming against his chest. "I want you to." He closed his eyes, pressed his forehead to hers, tried to calm himself. His fangs were back, pushing into his lower lip, hard and painful. "No." Her long, perfect legs wrapped around him, her ankles locking, holding him to her. "I want you to." Her breasts flattened against his chest as she arched up against him, baring her throat. The scent of her blood was everywhere, all over him, filling the room. "Aren't you scared?" he whispered. "Yes, but I still want you to." "Isabel, I can't." He bit her. His teeth slid, razor sharp, into the vein at her throat, like a knife slicing into the skin of an apple. Blood exploded into his mouth. It was like nothing he had experienced before. With Jace, he had been barely alive. With Maureen, the guilt had crushed him even as he had drunk from her. He had certainly never had the sense that either of the people he had bitten had liked it. But Isabel gasped, her eyes flying open and her body arcing up against him. She purred like a cat, stroking his hair, his back, little urgent movement of her hand saying, "Don't stop, don't stop." He poured out of her, into him, lighting his body. He had never felt, imagined anything else like it. He could feel the strong, sure beat of her heat pounding through her veins into his, and for that moment it was as if he lived again, and his heart contracted with pure elation. He broke away. He wasn't sure how, but he broke away and rolled onto his back, his fingers digging hard into the mattress at his sides. He was still shuddering as his fangs retracted. The room shimmered all around him, the way things did in the few moments after he drank human, living blood. "Is he?" he whispered. He was afraid to look at her, afraid that now that his teeth were no longer in her throat, she would stare at him with revulsion and horror. "What?" "You didn't stop me," he said. It was a half-accusation, half-hope. "I didn't want to." He looked at her. She was on her back, her chest rising and falling fast, as if she'd been running. There were two neat puncture wounds in the side of her throat, and two thin lines of blood that ran down her neck to her collarbone. Obeying an instinct that seemed to run deep under the skin, Simon leaned forward and licked the blood from her throat, tasting salt, tasting Isabel. She shuddered, her fingers fluttering in his hair. "Simon." He drew back. She was looking at him with her big dark eyes, very serious, her cheeks flushed. "I..." "What?" For a wild moment, he thought she was going to say, "I love you." But instead, she shook her head, yawned, and hooked her finger through one of the belt loops on his jeans. Her fingers played with the bare skin at his waist. Somewhere, Simon had heard that yawning was a sign of blood loss. He panicked. "Are you okay? Did I drink too much? Do you feel tired? Are..." She scooted closer to him. "I am fine. You made yourself stop. And I'm a shadow hunter. We replace blood at triple the rate a normal human being does." "Did you..." He could barely bring himself to ask. "Did you like it?" "Yeah." Her voice was husky. "I liked it."
"Really?"
She giggled. "You couldn't tell? I thought maybe you were faking it." She raised herself up on one elbow and looked down at him with her glowing dark eyes. How could eyes be dark and bright at the same time? "I don't fake things, Simon," she said. "And I don't lie, and I don't pretend." "You're a heartbreaker, Isabel Lightwood," he said, as lightly as he could with her blood still running through him like fire. Jace told Clary once you'd walk all over me in high-heeled boots.
That was then. You're different now.
She eyed him.
You're not scared of me.
He touched her face.
And you're not scared of anything.
I don't know. Her hair fell forward.
Maybe you'll break my heart.
Before he could say anything, she kissed him, and he wondered if she could taste her own blood.
Now shut up. I want to sleep, she said,
and she curled up against his side and closed her eyes. Somehow, now they fit, where they hadn't before. Nothing was awkward, or poking into him, or banging against his leg. It didn't feel like childhood and sunlight and gentleness. It felt strange and heated and exciting and powerful and different. Simon lay awake, his eyes on the ceiling, his hands stroking Isabel's silky black hair absently. He felt like he'd been caught up in a tornado and deposited somewhere very far away, where nothing was familiar. Eventually, he turned his head and kissed Izzy, very lightly, on the forehead. She stirred and murmured, but didn't open her eyes. When Clary woke in the morning, Jace was still asleep, curled on his side, his arm outstretched just enough to touch her shoulder. She kissed his cheek and got to her feet. She was about to pad into the bathroom to take a shower when she was overcome by curiosity. She went quietly to the bedroom door and peered out. The blood on the hallway wall was gone, the plaster unmarked. It was so clean, she wondered if the whole thing had been a dream. The blood, the conversation in the kitchen with Sebastian, all of it. She took a step across the corridor, placed her hand against the wall where the bloody handprint had been.
Good morning.
She whirled. It was her brother. He had come out of his room soundlessly and was standing in the middle of the hall, regarding her with a crooked smile. He looked freshly showered, damp. His fair hair was the color of silver, almost metallic.
You planning to wear that all the time? He asked, eyeing her nightgown.
No, I was just... She didn't want to say she'd been checking to see if there was still blood in the hall. He just looked at her, amused and superior. Clary backed away. I'm going to get dressed. He said something after her, but she didn't pause to hear what it was, just darted back into Jace's bedroom and closed the door behind her. A moment later, she heard voices in the hallway. Sebastian's again, and a girl's, speaking musical Italian. The girl from last night, she thought. The one he'd said was asleep in his room. It was only then that she realized how much she'd suspected he was lying. But he'd been telling the truth. I'm giving you a chance, he'd said. Can you give me a chance? Could she? This was Sebastian they were talking about. She mulled it over feverishly while she showered and dressed carefully. The clothes in the wardrobe, having been selected for Jocelyn, were so far from her usual style that it was hard to choose what to wear. She found a pair of jeans, designer, from the price tag still attached, and a dotted silk shirt with a bow at the neck that had a vintage feel she liked. She threw her own velvet jacket on over it and headed back to Jace's room. But he was gone. And it wasn't hard to guess where. The rattle of dishes, the sound of laughter, and the smell of cooking floated up from downstairs. She took the glass stairs two at a time, but paused on the bottom step, looking into the kitchen. Sebastian was leaning against the refrigerator, arms crossed, and Jace was making something in a pan that involved onions and eggs. He was barefoot, his hair messy, his shirt buttoned haphazardly, and the sight of him made her heart turn over. She had never seen him like this, first thing in the morning, still with that warm golden aura of sleep clinging to him. And she felt a piercing sadness that all these firsts were happening with a Jace who wasn't really her Jace. Even if he did look happy, eyes shadow-free,
laughing as he flipped the eggs in the pan and slid an omelet onto a plate. Sebastian said something to him, and Jace looked over at Clary and smiled.
Scrambled or fried?
Scrambled. I didn't know you could make eggs. She came down from the steps and over to the kitchen counter. Sun was streaming through the windows. Despite the lack of clocks in the house, she guessed it was late morning, and the kitchen glittered in glass and chrome.
Who can't make eggs?
Jace wondered aloud. Clary raised her hand, and at the same time so did Sebastian. She couldn't help a little jerk of surprise and put her arm down hastily, but not before Sebastian had seen and grinned. It was always grinning. She wished she could slap it off his face. She looked away from him and busied herself putting together a breakfast plate from what was on the table. Bread, fresh butter, jam, and sliced bacon, the chewy round kind. There was juice, too, and tea. They ate pretty well here, she thought. Although, if Simon was anything to go by, teenage boys were always hungry. She glanced toward the window and did a double take. The view was no longer of a canal, but of a hill rising in the distance, topped by a castle.
Where are we now? She asked.
Prague, said Sebastian. Jace and I have an errand to do here. He glanced out the window. We should probably get going soon, in fact. She smiled sweetly at him.
Can I come with you?
Sebastian shook his head. No.
Why not?
Clary crossed her arms over her chest. Is this some manly bonding thing I can't be a part of?
Are you getting matching haircuts?
Jace handed her a plate with scrambled eggs on it, but he was looking at Sebastian.
Maybe she could come, he said.
I mean, this particular errand, it's not dangerous. Sebastian's eyes were like the woods in the Frost poem, dark and deep. They gave nothing away. Anything can turn dangerous.
Well, it's your decision, Jace shrugged, reached for a strawberry, popped it into his mouth, and sucked the juice off his fingers.
Now that, Clary thought, was a clear and absolute difference between this Jace and hers. Her Jace had a ferocious and all-consuming curiosity about everything. He would never shrug and go along with someone else's plan. He was like the ocean, ceaselessly throwing itself against a rocky shore. And this Jace was a calm river shining in the sun.
Because he's happy?
Clary's hand tensed on her fork, her knuckles whitening. She hated that little voice in her head. Like the Seelie Queen, it planted doubts where there shouldn't be doubts, asked questions that had no answer.
I'm going to get my stuff.
After grabbing another berry off the plate, Jace popped it into his mouth and shot upstairs. Clary craned her head up. The clear glass step seemed invisible, making it look like he was flying upward, not running.
You're not eating your eggs.
It was Sebastian. He'd come around the counter, still noiselessly, damn it, and was looking at her, his eyebrows raised.
I don't actually like eggs, she confessed.
But you didn't want to tell Jace that, because he seemed so pleased to be making you breakfast.
Since this was accurate, Clary said nothing.
Funny, isn't it? Said Sebastian. The lies good people tell. He'll probably make you eggs every day for the rest of your life now, and you'll choke them down because you can't tell him you don't like them.
Clary thought of the Seelie Queen.
Love makes liars of us all.
Exactly. Quick study, aren't you?
He took a step toward her, and an anxious tingle seared her nerves. He was wearing the same cologne Jace wore. She recognized the citrusy black pepper scent, but on him it smelled different. Wrong, somehow.
We have that in common, Sebastian said, and began to unbutton his shirt.
She stood up hastily.
What are you doing?
Easy there, little sis. He popped the last button, and his shirt hung open. He smiled lazily.
You're the magical rune girl, aren't you?
Clary nodded slowly.
I want a strength rune, he said. And if you are the best, I want it from you. You wouldn't deny your big brother a rune, would you? His dark eyes raked her. Besides, you want me to give you a chance. And you want me to give you a chance, she said. So I'll make you a deal. I'll give you a strength rune if you let me come with you on your errand. He stripped the shirt the rest of the way off and dropped it onto the counter. Deal. I don't have a steely. She didn't want to look at him, but it was hard not to. He seemed to be deliberately invading her personal space. His body was much like Jace's, hard, without any extra ounce of flesh anywhere, the muscles showing clearly under the skin. He was scarred like Jace, too, though he was so pale that the white marks stood out less than they did against Jace's gold skin. On her brother, they were like silver pin on white paper. He drew a steely from his belt and handed it to her. Use mine. All right, she said. Turn around. He did, and she swallowed back a gasp. His bare back was striped with ragged scars, one after the other, too even to be random accident. Whip marks. Who did this to you? She said. Who do you think? Our father, he said. He used a whip made of demon metal, so no Irazi could heal them. They're meant to remind me. Remind you of what? Of the perils of obedience. She touched one. It felt hot under her fingertips, as if newly made and rough, where the skin around it was smooth. Don't you mean disobedience? I mean what I said. Do they hurt? All the time. Impatiently, he glanced back over his shoulder. What are you waiting for? Nothing. She set the tip of the steely to his shoulder blade, trying to keep her hand steady. Part of her mind raced, thinking how easy it would be to mark him with something that would damage him, sicken him, twist his insides. But what would happen to Jace if she did? Shaking her hair out of her face, she carefully drew the Fortis rune at the juncture of his shoulder blade and back, just where, if he were an angel, he would have wings. When she was done, he turned and took the steely from her, then shrugged his shirt back on. She didn't expect a thank you, and didn't get one. He rolled his shoulders back as he buttoned the shirt and grinned. You are good, he said, but that was all. A moment later, the steps rattled, and Jace returned, shrugging on a suede jacket. He had clipped on his weapons belt, too, and wore fingerless dark gloves. Clary smiled at him, with a warmth she didn't feel. Sebastian says I can come with you. Jace raised his eyebrows. Matching haircuts for everyone? I hope not, said Sebastian. I look terrible with curls. Clary glanced down at herself. Do I need to change into gear? Not really. This isn't the sort of errand where we're expecting to have a fight. But it's good to be prepared. I'll get you something from the weapons room, said Sebastian, and vanished upstairs. Clary cursed herself silently for not having found the weapons room while she was searching. Surely it had something inside that could provide some sort of clue as to what they were planning. Jace touched the side of her face, and she jumped. She'd nearly forgotten he was there. You sure you want to do this? Absolutely. I'm going stir-crazy in the house. Besides, you taught me to fight. I figure you'd want me to use it. His lips quirked into a devilish grin. He brushed her hair back and murmured something into her ear about using what she'd learned from him. He leaned away as Sebastian joined them, his own jacket on and a weapons belt in his hand. There was a dagger thrust through it, and a seraph blade. He reached out to draw Clary close to him, and pulled the belt around her waist, double-looping it and settling it low on her hips. She was too surprised to push him away, and he was done before she had the chance. Turning away, he moved toward the wall, where the outline of a doorway had appeared, shimmering like a doorway in a dream. They stepped through it. A soft knock on the library door made Maris raise her head. It was a cloudy day, dim outside the library windows, and the green-shaded lamps cast small pools of light in the circular room. She couldn't say how long she'd been sitting behind the desk. Empty coffee mugs littered the surface in front of her. She rose to her feet. "Come in." There was a soft click as the door opened, but no sound of footsteps. A moment later, a parchment-robed figure glided into the room, his hood raised, shadowing his face.
"You called on us, Maris Lightwood?"
Maris rolled her shoulders back. She felt cramped and tired and old.
"Brother Zachariah, I was expecting... Well, it doesn't matter."
"Brother Enoch? He is senior to me. But I thought perhaps that your call might have something to do with the disappearance of your adoptive son. I have a particular interest in his well-being."
She looked at him curiously. Most Silent Brothers didn't editorialize or speak of their personal feelings, if they had any. Smoothing her tangled hair back, she stepped out from behind the desk.
"Very well. I want to show you something."
She had never really gotten used to the Silent Brothers, to the soundless way they moved, as if their feet didn't touch the ground. Zachariah seemed to hover beside her as she led him across the library to a map of the world tacked to the north wall. It was a Shadow Hunter map. It showed Idris in the center of Europe and the ward around it as a border of gold. On a shelf below the map were two objects. One was a shard of glass crusted with dry blood. The other was a worn leather cuff bracelet decorated with the rune for angelic power.
"These are Jace Herendell's cuff and Jonathan Morgenstern's blood. I understood attempts to track them were unsuccessful."
"It isn't tracking precisely." Maris straightened her shoulders. "When I was in the circle, there was a mechanism Valentine used by which he could locate us all. Unless we were in certain protected places, he knew where we were at all times. I thought there was a chance he might have done the same to Jace when he was a child. He never seemed to have trouble finding him."
"What kind of mechanism do you speak of?"
"A mark. Not one from the Grey Book. We all had it. I had nearly forgotten about it. After all, there was no way to get rid of it."
"If Jace had it, would he not know of it and take steps to prevent you using it to find him?"
Maris shook her head. "It could be as small as a tiny, almost invisible white mark under his hair, as mine is. He would not have known he had it. Valentine wouldn't have wanted to tell him." Brother Zachariah moved apart from her, examining the map.
"And what has been the result of your experiment?"
"Jace has it," Maris said, but she did not sound pleased or triumphant. "I've seen him on the map. When he appears, the map flares, like a spark of light in the location where he is, and his cuff flares at the same time. So I know it is him, and not Jonathan Morgenstern. Jonathan never appears on the map."
"And where is he? Where is Jace?"
"I've seen him appear, just for a few seconds each time, in London, Rome, and Shanghai. Just a little while ago, he flickered into existence in Venice, and then vanished again."
"How is he traveling so quickly between cities?"
"By portal?" She shrugged. "I don't know. I just know that every time the map flickers, I know he's alive. For now. And it's like I can breathe again, just for a little while." She shut her mouth decidedly, lest the other words come pouring out. How she missed Alec and Isabel, but could not bear to call them back to the Institute, where Alec at least would be expected to take responsibility in the manhunt for his own brother. How she still thought of Max every day, and it was like someone had emptied her lungs of air, and she would catch at her heart, afraid she was dying. She could not lose Jace, too.
"I can understand that,"
Brother Zechariah folded his hands in front of him.